Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, licensed marriage family therapist, an educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and mental health consultant. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello, Elizabeth.
Hello, Brian.
How are you today?
I'm doing very well. I wonder, though, if everyone kind of grapples or struggles with the same things I do, because I quite often lay in bed at night and wonder, I don't think anyone else thinks about this stuff and worries about it like I do. Like, maybe I'm really the only one grappling away here in my little corner of the world. And I was saying, wow, this poor woman.
Well, I don't know. Take your own advice. Get it out there. Share. And you'd be surprised at how many people can sympathize with you or go through the same thing.
That's my hope every week, right? That if mm-hmm. we tell our stories and other people relate or resonate with that story in some way, we all feel like we're part of a community together. It's always my hope.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Did you get a new hair, Buzz?
Yeah.
It's a buzz.
Yeah, I buzz my own hair for the past 15 years or so.
Have you?
I've saved a lot of money.
I bet you have. And your headset fits really nicely, though.
Yeah, it fits better.
Well, I'm glad to see you today. And we actually have a full house today in the studio. I'm excited to introduce our guest today. But this is our conversation with the Reluctant Therapist, our weekly gathering to tell our stories and to share what goes on in our lives and to hopefully help make each other's journey a little more fun and a little more healthy and happy. And you can be part of our conversation by joining us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. Like our page and you'll get updates of shows that are coming up. And sometimes I post archived shows. We also have our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can get information there or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. And you can always find great information at our kcbx.org website. And our shows are all archived there under the news and talk label or tab. And we're all the way at the bottom. And so please tune in other ways, listen to previous shows. And today we'll be opening the phone lines in a few minutes, 805-781-3875, to join us on the air with your thoughts and ideas or questions. So today's topic is a little bit of a follow-up to last week's topic, and then hopefully going off in many different areas. But last week we talked about community and how one of our great quests in life is to find our people, to find the place where we feel like we fit in and we belong and feel nurtured and supported. Because what makes life challenging for most people, what really compromises our mental health and well-being, is when we're too isolated or feel alienated or feel disenfranchised. You know, we humans are a group think animal. We like to be in groups. And we do better and thrive when we have a support system. So this whole idea of trying to find our community, we touched on it last week, and some people called in and talked about struggling to find community and how do we find where we belong or how do we know where we fit in. And it kind of keeps coming up for me this week. So I wanted to continue on in the thought, because, you know, my daughter Kelly is still under the pressure of figuring out where she's going to go to college next year. And so we're visiting the colleges she got into. And, you know, the advice that we consistently get is, you know, go where your people are. You'll know your tribe is on some campus somewhere and you'll just feel that they're there and you know it's the right place. And so I keep thinking about that with our own sense of community here and how we know where our people are. And so I thought today it'd be nice to talk to some members of a specific community about their experience being a part of this community and if they feel a part of a specific community or how they identify their connections in culture. Because quite often I think what happens is that we find ourselves in a community that at some point stops being beneficial to our mental health and well-being, that sometimes our own community can start to feel very stifling or can start to feel very constricting, limiting, and that our identity within that community kind of prevents us from growing or expanding our ideas or, you know, developing other interests in life. And so ultimately, sometimes being able to disengage from communities that we're too heavily involved in can be the thing we need to do to help us thrive. And that's something that I didn't really get to touch on last week, but I really kept thinking about all this week, that for some people, it's not a matter of finding the right community. it actually might be realizing that the community that you're a part of no longer serves you in the healthiest of ways. So today, on this conversation with a reluctant therapist, I have three friends that I've invited to be in the studio. And my three friends, as we've been discussing for the last half hour, how we're going to introduce ourselves. So I'm just going to let you introduce yourselves, and then we'll kind of talk about the topic. So my first guest is Greg Perry, who happens to be a coworker of mine here at KCBX. Greg, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
And my other guest is Grant Garcia, who was a student of mine at Cal Poly for a while, and then we've just grown to be friends over the last few years.
Yes, hi. It's a pleasure to be here today.
Nice to have you here. And then my other friend is Michael Jenkinson, who is a resident artist at PCPA, and we've been friends for almost 8 or 9 years through the theater world, because my daughter Kelly was a youth, what do they call it, young performer, youth performer?
Mm-hmm, young performer.
100 years ago at during Seussical the Musical. Mm-hmm. And you enjoyed her company so much.
I sure did.
So welcome, Michael and Grant and Greg, to the program. And the community that I wanted to talk about, or kind of you represent, invited you in to represent, is the gay community. And we had already talked about, do you identify yourself as part of the gay community? How does that work? I'm going to open it up to you and let you introduce yourself and maybe answer that question a bit. How do you introduce yourself to the world?
It's
been an awkward conversation for the last hour to figure out. How do we even broach into this conversation? But go ahead.
Well, if I meet somebody new, mm-hmm. and I'm introducing myself, I think it depends on who I'm meeting still. I mean, so there is still... I told you before that I feel a little stress telling people that I'm gay.
Mm-hmm.
And so that I'm not where I want to be, really, with that whole thing. So I'd rather be perfectly comfortable with it, but I'm not. But when I meet somebody, if I want to let them know that I'm gay, I don't come out and say it like you would expect me to do it. Like other people can say I'm a hairdresser or I'm a bartender.
But part of your life is not your job or your primary identity.
Right.
So how do you introduce yourself? I'm a wife, I'm a mother, I'm an educator.
I introduce myself to people as, you know, just myself. And if they have want to know if I'm married, I tell them I have a partner.
So tell us a little bit about who you are outside of the studio.
Well, I grew up on the Central Coast. I do have a partner of 20 years. We're getting married in a couple of weeks.
Congratulations.
It'll be our 20th anniversary. So we're getting married on our 20th anniversary, which is really nice. I went to school in the North County, went into the Air Force. That's where I came out. There's actually a community in the Air Force, believe it or not, there was at the time. And so I was really happy about the DOMA being changed. And then I moved back after the Air Force and was involved in the local gay community for a while, but not so much anymore. We've kind of built our life as just a regular couple. That's what I see ourselves as, just another couple, you know, homeowners, pet owners. You know, we have friends. We have plenty of straight friends. We have gay friends. So
it's the wider circle of life is more about just those kind of regular things that some people would consider boring, just hanging out with my partner and hanging out with my pets and friends.
Going to work, going on vacations, you know. Not so much the gay lifestyle that other people might think that we would be doing.
Yeah, or an interesting thing is that we kept talking about, the three of us, how do we introduce ourselves? How do we want to be represented in greater society when we meet someone? So Grant, and I also want to say that I chose Grant and Greg and Michael because of different ages also, that Greg and I are around the same age, early 50s, and Grant just graduated from Poly a couple years ago, so you're
24,
and then Michael?
I'm 36.
36, so I thought it might be interesting to have these different perspectives, too, on what it is to be a gay man in our culture today, and how have things changed for someone, you know, who came out. How old were you, Greg?
I think you need to talk about coming out and what that actually means, because it has... People may not know what that term means.
That's
you come out to yourself, you come out to your local, your friends, you come out to the club scene so that you can start meeting other gay people, but you're not, you may not be coming out to your family or your straight friends. There's different levels of coming out. So
I guess we'll have to talk about how that's changed over the years for different generations.
Right. I came out to myself and started meeting other people when I was in my early 20s.
Early 20s.
Yeah.
So, Grant, tell us a little bit about you and how you find yourself here on the panel today, a little of your background.
So I've been in San Luis Obispo for about 6 years now, grew up in the Central Valley near Fresno. I graduated from Cal Poly in 2012 with a communication studies degree and had the pleasure of taking one of Elizabeth's classes, family psychology, which to this day is still my favorite class. I reference it almost every day. It's amazing. And I, too, am a gay man. That's why I'm here today. Something we talked about earlier was, do you introduce yourself as a gay man? Is that something that you consider to be a part of yourself? And I said no. But something that Greg just brought up when introducing what you do for work in your profession, I am a fashion buyer for a women's boutique. And that kind of, he mentioned the word hairdresser. And in my mind, I said, well, if you're a man and you're a hairdresser, stereotypes are going to assume that you're a gay man. Mm-hmm. So I guess in a sense, when I introduce myself as Grant and a fashion buyer for Ambiance, I kind of, in a sense, give that away a little bit, which isn't a problem for me. I, too, struggle a little bit with not being 100% comfortable with letting people know that I'm gay. I haven't had very many problems with it. I've been very fortunate, I feel. But yeah, that's me.
And so how, because Greg talked about being coming out to himself in his early 20s. You are in your early 20s.
And I was probably around the same age. 4 years ago, maybe, around 20 is when I finally started. I think I knew for a while. I had this idea of their traditional white picket fence, husband, wife, and children that I was really holding on to for a long time. And once I finally let myself understand that that's something I could still achieve, I could still have my partner and be a homeowner and own pets and have friends of all kinds. Once I realized that that was something that I could achieve in life, then I came out to myself, I think, in a sense, and then started that. I didn't tell my friends right away, but I definitely started trying to meet people and get myself into the quote-unquote scene in San Luis Obispo and kind of took it from there, and it unraveled nicely, I would say.
So you feel, at this point, you feel supported by a community?
Yeah, the community I've created, whether that's friends from college, friends from home, friends that I've made in San Luis. I don't necessarily feel that I'm a large part of the gay community in San Luis Obispo. I think partially that's because there isn't a large community in the area, and the one that is established is either very, in my mind, a little clicky, or there's lots of generation gaps, which isn't necessarily a problem, but then it becomes an issue with commonalities and making friends. And
just the sheer size of the population on the Central Coast from Salinas to Santa Barbara.
Right.
I think it's difficult to find like-minded people, I think, of any community, because it's interesting. My husband and I have been here on the Central Coast for 30-something years, and the greatest struggle I feel we've had the whole time was finding our tribe or our group of people. And I would say in the last 10 years, we have an incredible, maybe 15, incredible group of people. But we were here for 15 years kind of trying to find like-minded people, and I think it's a challenge of any place that's smaller or a little more rural or has very diverse, you know, I don't think there's a central personality to this, you know, Salinas to Santa Barbara area. There's a lot of little small pockets.
And for me personally, I think it's about going in a way that I feel comfortable doing it. People of my age, I think, have become very media savvy, and I don't want to go on Grindr and meet new friends in the gay community. That's not what I'm looking for. I feel like that kind of has a stigma to it that I don't want to be associated with. And so I think here, mentioning Salinas to Santa Barbara, there are definitely people in the community that are looking to meet other people, but there's not a lot of options and resources in order to do that.
Yeah, not a central hub.
Right.
This is A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, joined in the studio this afternoon with by my friends Greg Perry and Grant Garcia and Michael Jenkinson. I invited them in because the three of them are gay men, and they were willing to come in and talk about their experience as gay men in this community and growing up and how things have changed over the last few decades, and if they've changed. And part of the inspiration for the show also was the It Gets Better project, because I watched quite a few of the videos, and if you're not familiar with them, but it was with this website, it was started by Dan Savage and his partner in 2010 in response to quite a few young boys, young men who committed suicide after being bullied for being gay or being tortured or being humiliated. And Dan Savage and his partner felt very compelled to get this message out there that if you've grown up in a very small and stifling community or a family that's not supportive, or you feel trapped and you feel that you're discovering things about your identity that you're not sure your family is going to accept, things do get better, that you can move out into the greater world, that you can go away to college or move to a bigger city, or you know, get out of the isolation, and things ultimately do get better. And so it is very inspiring the last 4 years that this project has grown to include, you know, people, bullied teens of all backgrounds, and specifically the gay, lesbian, bisexual, queer, and transgender communities of teens, to give them a place to come for hope. Because I think if you're not within a metropolitan area, or you're not surrounded by people who are open-minded or accepting, it can be very daunting. And it's very daunting to be a teen, no matter what your identity is. I think in our culture today, being a teen is one of the most stressful times in our life, because if you're not being bullied or picked on because of your identity or how you look or your size or your shape, you're being pressured to be perfect, to get straight A's, to get into the best college, you know, to achieve things well beyond the adults in your life did at the age of 16 to 18. So I really love this idea that we provide a space for teenagers or young people or anyone who's kind of struggling with their identity to be able to come together and know that things get better. But I wonder how things have gotten better, or if they've gotten better. You're welcome to join our conversation, 805-781-3875, with any comments or questions or concerns. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or at our website, thereluctanttherapist.com, and as always at kcbx.org. So my third guest today is Michael Jenkinson, and Michael is, as I mentioned, is a resident artist at PCPA. And you want to talk a little bit about your background and experience?
Yeah, I grew up in Northern California and moved here in 97 to attend the conservatory at PCPA. I graduated in 99, went away and did lots of other things in the theater world, and then came back in 2005. I think, and have been here pretty much full time ever since on the Central Coast. You know, I wanted to just jump on board with what Grant said. You know, it's interesting. Like, I don't necessarily think of being gay as being an identifier for myself. It is just a part of who I am. But I do feel like when I introduce myself as a theater artist, as a choreographer, as a dancer, there, it's already sort of packaged in that sentence, you know, the what do you do? I'm a dancer. that can be an association. That is a stereotype. That's not always true at all. But so I do feel like that's one of the ways I inadvertently let people know if they don't already know. And I just wanted to say, you know, it's interesting. I think I knew about my sexual orientation at a very young age. I think I knew what that was, and I dealt with it when I was around 16, 17, with really, I guess, if the coming out that I'm talking about is talking to my parents about it at an early age for the time when I did it. You know, I feel like now that timeline is very, very different. I remember being on tour, and I was performing on the national tour of Greece, and we were in Indianapolis for a week, and I remember walking around downtown Indianapolis in the early part of the evening and seeing a gay couple that maybe were in their early teens holding hands and walking around this the city. Now, granted, it was a city, but it's in the heart of the country, and it's not a San Francisco or Chicago or L.A. But it was really profound to me to see that open expression of their relationship, their comfort, and it's an image that's never gone away, because this must have been 2003, and just my realizing how different things had become even in 8 or 9 years, since I had really dealt with it. So that's kind of my experience with the addressing of, and yeah.
So I'm curious about when you talk about community, because I kind of keep going back to the theme of community and finding your people and where you belong. I think there might be an assumption that there is a gay community, and you don't want to start thinking, well, do you all know each other because you're part of the gay community? Do people have that assumption? And is there an organized kind of, a gay community? And I think of young people who are discovering their sexuality. Is there, I'm just wondering, is there some sort of way that people connect or that you find each other? Or is it very much an individual journey? I'm just wondering.
I think it depends on who you're talking to and where you're at. It's probably pretty telling that Michael and Grant and myself don't know each other. We've just met this afternoon. So, no, there isn't that assumption that everyone knows everyone in the gay community is completely false. It doesn't even matter if you're in a small town or a small area like we're at. I think we were, if you're in a metropolitan area, I think the people that go to the metropolitan areas are there because they want to be, they need more of a tight-knit community. They need to meet other people. And granted, if you're here and you're a single gay man, it's a little hard, right? There's slim pickings out there.
That would be very true.
But it's for heterosexuals as well.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
So if you're here and you're gay, you're here for many more reasons than the fact that you're gay. You're not here for the gay community necessarily. There is a gay community, and there's, very vocal, and there's organizations, and people meet, and there's potlucks, and there's get-togethers. But it's not necessary to be, a happy gay man or a gay couple on the Central Coast. There's many more things about this area that are satisfying for me.
Yeah, the happiest place. So I'm curious then, what was the most supportive thing and what has been the most challenging thing for you being a gay man or identifying yourself as a gay man? What things have worked well or not worked well for you? And do you feel like it's even an issue? Do you feel there's any discrimination are you concerned ever about people, judging or?
I've been fortunate and have never really truly felt any discrimination. I've, ever since coming out to friends and family, have always been truly and fully supported. I was always that little boy that everyone knew was gay and was just patiently waiting for me to come out. And so when I did, it was kind of like hands up in the air, hooray, we're excited and happy for you. So for me, that was something that I was truly thankful for. Something that I do struggle with, and I think it's more of a personal and in my mind, is that I sometimes feel that there are judgments upon me because I'm not a larger part of the gay community and that I don't strive to make that extra effort to have a ton of gay friends. And I think that's something that I've created just based on conversations and my friendships with my heterosexual friends, is that there's an assumption that because I'm gay, I therefore must have a handful of gay friends that I go out to the bars with and go on trips with and that type of thing. And that's not me, because I was fortunate and had so many of my friends growing up and even in college that knew me prior to me being gay still be my friend afterwards and show me that support and love. It wasn't something that I needed to reach out and find new friendships and find new groups of people. Like, I still had my niche and my group. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that I think I've kind of created in my own mind. I don't think that's actually something that people are judging me for or upset because I do of course have great gay friends. But it's not something that they became my friends because they were gay. We just became friends because we met and we had similar interests and we liked doing the same hobbies and our friendships kind of flourished from there.
And I guess my idea, going back to the whole idea of community and our mental health and feeling supported by who our community is, and I'm hearing a little bit of, sometimes that community that you assume is going to be the place you're supposed to hang out isn't going to be the most healthy or supportive community to be a part of. And I wonder for some people, and not just in the gay community or, you know, just in general, do you ever find yourself in a community that's restrictive or feels a little oppressive, or that you find yourself having to adjust your behavior, your personality, so that you fit with a particular community? And then I ask that in general. What are your experiences in your community? 805-781-3875 is the number to join the conversation today. If you have any questions or comments or anything you'd like to ask of Michael or Grant or Greg, and anything that's on your mind about this idea of, does it get better? How has your life been? Do you feel supported? Are we a more accepting culture than we were 30 years ago? Or do we still struggle with the same levels of bullying or discrimination? Because I spent some time before the show and I was researching the timeline of things that have happened in gay rights movement, basically, starting back in 1924, when the first Society for Human Rights was founded in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
I'm sure you and I were not there. But it was founded by Henry Gerber, and it was interesting. It was the first gay rights organization, but it was disbanded very quickly because of political pressure. And it wasn't again until 1950 when Harry Hay founded the first national gay rights organization in Los Angeles to fight and help eliminate discrimination. Also in the 50s, of course, homosexuality was classified as a mental disorder, mental illness. It was classified by the American Psychiatric Association as a sociopathic personality disturbance. So that had a very huge impact on a lot of people feeling they needed to be underground or hide or stay closeted because of the pressure about classifications. In 1970, the first gay pride parade was in New York City in response to riots that had happened the previous year. There was, during 1968, the civil rights movement and the women's movement, the gay rights movement, all of these movements with different groups kind of happened simultaneously. And it seems, that all of the human rights movements still kind of, in my mind, still struggle in some ways today. The women's movement still struggles for equality when it comes to pay or to gender, discrimination. African Americans still struggle with a lot of the same rights. So I wonder, we think that we've come so far and we're so accepting, and, I'm glad, that people are feeling more free to come out or talk about their sexuality or talk about their experiences. But I wonder how far we've really come from 1970, in the first gay pride parade. 1973, homosexuality was finally removed as a classification as a mental illness. And then in 1974, the first openly gay elected official was a woman who was a Ann Arbor City Council member. And then in 1977, Harvey Milk was elected to the San Francisco Board of Supervisors, which was historic in its own right. In part for all that he did in such a short amount of time, and also because he was murdered because of homophobia and who he was. In 1979, 75,000 people marched for the first time on Washington in support of gay rights. And 1982, Wisconsin was the first state to outlaw sexual discrimination. In 1996, President Clinton signed the DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act, which set things backwards in the gay rights movement. And 2011, President Obama finally said he would not defend DOMA. And as of now, in 2014, 17 states have legalized same-sex marriage. So from your perspective, have we come as far as we need to come? Is it just a free and open society for everyone to be who they want to be? Or do you still feel there's pressures or loss of opportunities or discrimination? 805-781-3875 to join the conversation with your thoughts and ideas or questions or comments. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I am Elizabeth Barrett, and we'll be back to take your calls.
That number again to speak with Elizabeth is 781-3875, area code 805-781-3875. Coming up tomorrow at 1 o'clock, it's Issues and Ideas. Chrissy Hewitt and Stephen DeLuque bring you another edition of Ears on Art, exploring the world of fine arts on the Central Coast. And the Paso Robles wine region is best known for its Zinfandels and Rhone-style wines, but Cabernet and Bordeaux varietals have made their mark on the area too. A grassroots nonprofit, the Paso Robles Cab Collective, highlights these wines with their event, Cabs of Distinction. Central Coast Wine Classic founder and chairman Archie McLaren talks about the event and the wines that inspired it with Cynthia Lohr of J. Lohr Winery and Daniel Dow of Dow Vineyards. That's Issues and Ideas tomorrow at 1 o'clock here on KCBX. The number again to call and speak with the Reluctant Therapist and her guest is 805-781-3875. The time is now 2:30.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, joined in the studio today by my guests, Greg Perry, Grant Garcia, and Michael Jenkinson. I thank you all for taking the time to come in. And before we started the conversation today, you know, I had invited each of you because I wanted to talk about community in a general sense, kind of around this idea of it gets better, that for young people or for any people of any age who find themselves restricted by their community or their family and feel that they can't be themselves or to fully experience their own identity freely, I wanted to explore what that was like from different perspectives. And I asked the three of you, because you were willing to come in and talk from your perspective as gay men, and not that being a gay man is your primary way of identifying yourselves, and that was clear, and we talked earlier in the show, but that you're willing to come in and kind of talk from that perspective today. And I'd really like to hear from other voices too of different communities and what it feels like if you're in a religious community and maybe you don't feel that you're completely connected to all of the values or beliefs of the people in your religious community. Does that mean you have to leave that religious community? Do you still find acceptance for yourself within that organization? Or something as simple as being part of a youth activity. If you're part of the theater, my daughter grew up doing theater, and I think she really struggled with that community because there were certain expectations of how you would behave or act or what you're interested in. And if you're not really going along with the norm of that community, that theater community, she found it very difficult to feel accepted or connected. So although my three guests are representing their perspectives from the gay community, I don't want to limit the conversation to just that experience, because I think any of us who have ever felt restricted by a community that we belong to can really relate to this idea of that part of our human journey is to know who we are, to feel comfortable with who we are, and then to be able to find an accepting group or community that allows us to really be who we are fully. And that because you're a gay man doesn't mean that you necessarily limit your life to a gay community. And that if you're, you know, someone of a very strong religious background, you don't necessarily identify your whole life by that religious background. So before we went to break, I had asked the question that, do you feel that things that we've changed since 1924, that we have an open and accepting society, that anyone can be who they want to be? Has that been your experience, Michael?
Well, a couple of thoughts about it. I think for me personally, my whole life since the time I was 7 has been based in a theater community. So doing youth theater when I was growing up in Northern California, to that led me here for professional training. Then that took me out into the world and then brought me back here as an educator and performer still. And I think what made coming out for me a little bit different, or the acceptance of self and sexual orientation, was the fact that I was in a community where homosexuality has a very dominant presence and a very supported one, you know, across the board. And as I live on the Central Coast, my community continues to be my PCPA community, because that's why I'm here. You know, I love the Central Coast, and living here it's an amazing place to have an opportunity to be, just because of the beauty that it holds. But I work with the people that I socialize with, you know, when the once in a blue moon that you and I get together. Outside of that, you know, I really work with the socialize with people that I work with. My partner also works for the company, so everything's incredibly insular. So I can't say that I've had a huge experience of what the Central Coast's community is like, but that theater, that I think you were saying, the climate, that climate that I'm in is very supporting and accepting of my lifestyle. So I've always had that padding, which has been a huge blessing. Have we come far? I mean, I was saying on the little break, you know, I feel like we're certainly further ahead than we were 30 years ago, you know, just as I've seen things develop and change. But the big thing is that we all have to be on board for that change. You know, it has to be something that is accepted by all in order for there to be a normalcy to it, in order for it just to become a thing, in order for there not even to be the need, perhaps, to identify yourself as gay when being introduced to somebody. You know, you're saying you introduce yourself as a wife and a mother, mm-hmm. but you don't. That would be after where you say, "Hi, I'm Elizabeth Barrett."
Yes.
You know, and when I sit down and say, "Hi, I'm Michael Jenkinson," the "I'm gay" thing doesn't really pop into my awareness to need to communicate.
Right.
But ultimately, it is one, because we want to make sure that that's okay, that the conversation's going to be safe, that we're all fine with that. There is that energy around it, but it's not until everybody's on board with my partner and I being together, doing the normal everyday things that we do, grocery shop, hike, make dinner. He has a garden right now.
Do you feel comfortable holding hands in public? Do you kiss your partner in public or hold hands?
In this community, yes. If I were to go back home to the Central Valley, probably not. Mm-hmm. Just because I've been away for so long, I'm less aware of the surroundings there and the people in the community, and I would feel uncomfortable in that type setting. So I would definitely have to go back on that comment about the climate. I think in this area, we've probably all been very fortunate to feel a little bit of comfortableness with the people in San Luis Obispo County, and the fact that most people tend to be pretty liberal in their ideas and thoughts, and that's been very helpful. But I think overall, have we gained a lot of strides? Yes and no. I kind of agree. Everybody kind of has to get on board. And I know for myself, where I'm from, I'm actually a confirmed Catholic, and the idea of religion just got brought up and that kind of approached into my mind. I don't follow Catholicism, though. It's not something when I go home, if I go to Mass, it's because my mom's dragging me on Christmas Eve mm-hmm. type of thing. It's not something that I choose to do, but that's also because the church that I grew up in and that I was confirmed in has a very strict view on homosexuality, and that has created an atmosphere in that area that doesn't make me feel comfortable attending or being a part of that. I'm sure if I was in a different area, maybe even in San Luis, I would feel more different. My roommate actually is also a Catholic, and it's something that we talked about recently. She grew up in the Central Coast and went through the same processes of becoming confirmed and being a part of the church, and her ideas and ideas of people back home are completely different, and that just kind of boggled my mind a little bit. It didn't. I, of course, understand that everybody has different views and that there's different severities in people's religion and the way that they take it. But it was interesting to think that her and her family and growing up in this community and being Catholics here have never had a stigma or any angst against homosexuality, whereas back where I'm from, there's definitely a stigma there. So
I wonder if, you know, in all communities, or I guess in, you know, all lives, that quest of finding where we're comfortable and where our people are and where we can most express who we are, you know, do we feel completely free doing that? And it sounds like both for Grant and Michael, you feel comfortable here. And I'm curious, Greg, how you're experiencing, you know, do you feel comfortable with public displays of affection, holding hands with your soon-to-be husband? Has that changed over the years? That's you're representing that older generation.
We have, but we've been selective when we've done that. I mean, sure, if we're in San Francisco, we've felt real comfortable holding hands. Or here, probably not, though. And that could simply go back to me being a little older and just having different experiences growing up and being a little more guarded. Maybe that's a little more ingrained in myself. But what I was thinking about as Grant was talking was that he said he would feel a little more uncomfortable holding hands going back to, I'm sorry, where?
Central Valley.
Central Valley. But, you know, when we think about it, people are people regardless of where they live. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure, you know, we have red states and blue states. You know, obviously people as a whole can move towards one side or the other. But I think really people are people. I don't think the ocean air is making us more liberal, you know, because we live on the Central Coast. So I don't know what that is, where the uncomfortableness comes or what creates that environment. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm comfortable here, but I'm not comfortable 100 miles east from here. So maybe that's something we're imagining. Maybe that's not really the case, or maybe I'm not sure where that's coming from. But I can say here on the Central Coast, my previous job, I wasn't as comfortable as I am now. Because it was a type of work that there wasn't, I think there was another gay person at that job, but I wasn't comfortable being out. They knew I was, but it was pretty much unspoken. I felt a little bit like I was a child again at home. You know, I think my parents knew, but we didn't talk about it. It was really, you know, kind of awkward all the time. Mm-hmm. And I'm much happier with that whole situation now. I'm in an environment with people that I work with that are much more open and much more accepting. So it can change within, you know, from one building to the next. It really can.
So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. I'm joined in the studio today by my friends Greg Perry, Grant Garcia, and Michael Jenkinson. We're talking about community. They're speaking specifically from their experiences as gay men in the community and how their experience has been growing up and have things changed throughout their lifetime and their experiences growing up. And I'm just wondering what your experiences are, because I started the idea for today's show kind of thinking about how challenging it is to find where we fit, and that quite often we might find ourselves in a community that's no longer supportive of who we are, and that a lot of our unhappiness or anxiety that we can be experiencing can be associated with being in a community that no longer supports who we are, or that no longer really serves who we need to be. Then do you have the courage to move away from a restrictive community if you need to? Because anything about us that's a little bit different can quite often cause us to feel uncomfortable and outside the norm or outside the mainstream. 805-781-3875 is the number to join the conversation. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. And so I'm interested to know how you feel about the change towards same-sex marriage. And, you know, Greg mentioned that you're getting married on your 20th anniversary. How has this process to getting to legalize same-sex marriage impacted your life, or has it been something that's impacted your life?
I don't think it's something that we really missed in our life, not having it. Mm-hmm. I can certainly see how a little of the injustice involved, and I'm happy. I'm really happy that things are changing. I hate to say it, I think the reason we're getting married is because of the benefits that we receive, and I think that's a huge part of it.
Absolutely.
But as far as, I really haven't thought that long hard about it, I'm sorry. But that's where we're at. You know, we're doing it because there are certain benefits that we will get that we didn't have access to before. We were registered domestic partners before. So in California, it was a little easier on us because domestic partnership brought a lot of that into it, what marriage had. But I'm certainly happy that things are changing.
Well, but I mean, the love that you and your partner share and the love of 20 years, you know, my partner and I have only been together for about two, but the love that you and your partner share of 20 years is really no different than the love that Chris and Elizabeth share, you know, especially that you guys are of the same generation. Mm-hmm. And there's no reason why you and your partner shouldn't have all the same benefits of the joint relationship that Elizabeth's mm-hmm. And Chris get to experience too. It is no different. It's just a partnership, you know, and I think that's the thing. There's no big mystery to it. It's just whom you love. And I think the celebration has been that simple. I don't think that there is, like, ruminating deep thoughts about it. At least there isn't for me. I'm sure there is for other people. But it really is about, oh, good, now if my partner and I choose to spend a lifetime together, we will have those benefits that are just your rights as a couple. You know, that's what it is.
Well, it's interesting too, because from a social science standpoint, there's a lot of research that talks about how marriage is good for our mental and physical health, which is ironic because I think a lot of people feel that marriage is kind of a crapshoot and 50% of them end in divorce, which is not actually correct, but we'll talk about that another day. But this idea that there is this, you know, being able to be a couple in society with this kind of label or this identification as being married, it does something for your self-esteem and for your mental health, and to feel connected to the community more, the grander community more, that, you know, all of a sudden you feel like you're more part of the mainstream.
You feel normal. You feel, and that you're right, that is a huge benefit to your mental health, to not feel like I'm living a life that perhaps is frowned upon, you know, by those observing me. There's now this thing that I can do to make this just a part of the everyday. My relationship is just a part of the everyday. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, I guess I hadn't thought about that benefit. We're talking to a therapist. It's about mental health too. You know, I mean, it really is. There is a huge sense of comfort knowing that that can be possible now.
Can you take a breath?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's nice to know that that's something that is afforded to us, and it's not something that we are being hindered by being gay. So absolutely.
So then on a totally different piece of the community question, being men in culture, just men in culture and gender, do you feel like things have changed in your lifetime towards being a man and the opportunities to, you know, participate, or the expectations of what it is to be a man, how to be masculine? Like, has that changed? Is there more freedom and openness? You know, did you ever find yourself, because you said, Greg, you said you're in the Air Force. Did you ever find yourself feeling like, you know, that role of being a man was very narrow and that's changed at all? Or have you always kind of...
I think that I always had the pressure to be a little more manly than my personality probably was inclined to be. So yeah, maybe I took on some personality traits or some affectations that are more manly than I may not have otherwise. If I hadn't have felt that pressure, my father was a truck driver, mm-hmm. right? Although in his defense, he was very accepting of me when he knew I was gay. But I was always around an environment where it was pretty manly, right? There was football every weekend. Mm-hmm. So I took on as much as I could to pass.
But do you feel, or all three of you, do you feel that pressure to be one type of man, like his masculinity expanded, the definition of it, has it expanded at all? Do you feel like there's more opportunities to be men in different ways? I don't know if I'm asking that correctly, but I'll let you think about it, and we'll talk to Mike. Thanks for waiting. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. The conversation kind of wandered since I called in.
That's okay. Take us back wherever you want to go.
Well, I'm a gay man. I've lived on the Central Coast for about 30 years now, and I've seen a lot of changes, and we got to be careful not to extrapolate from, you know, a happy little butthole of right now. Mm-hmm. Because right now is very different than it was even 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the rate of change is remarkable. So on the issue of, do we just reveal ourselves, and is the environment accepting of homosexuality now? I think we got to be real careful to say that it depends. And it's not unrealistic to say that society is one way on the coast and a different way 100 miles inland. And so when it comes to revealing my sexuality to other people, it's not the first thing that comes out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. But and that's, there's a reason for that. And the reason is I disclose depending on the circumstances. Mm-hmm. And I got to tell you, there's some people in the Fresno area that would hit me if I held my, I'm married, legally married here in California, and if I walked in front of the biker bar holding hands, I'd get punched. Mm-hmm. And it's not worth it. So I hold hands with my husband in public when I think it's safe, because it's not universally safe.
Exactly.
And I guess that was kind of the question at the top of the show is, you know, our job in life is to find a community that is supportive of who we are. And this might be really controversial to say, and I'll let all four of you men, you know, jump on me if I say this, but I wonder if we need to, instead of expecting that all people are going to be open and accepting and someday we're all going to sing Kumbaya together and we'll have fat acceptance and we'll have a feminist movement that's successful and all minorities will be, you know, accepted and gay marriage, instead of expecting that that's going to happen, maybe part of our job is to kind of go find our like-minded people and flock together. And am I too limiting in that thought?
Well, I think that's a two-edged sword.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can ghettoize yourself and you become inbred and insular, and it really diminishes life, I think.
No, I understand.
But over the course of the last 30 years, what I did was come out to whoever I could come out to, because that's what makes the difference. Mm-hmm. It's very hard for people to be judgmental and angry at somebody that they know and like otherwise.
Well, I like
so
that.
It's a two-edged sword. You got to create your community by coming out and let people desensitize to the fact that there's homosexuals in the room.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you taking the time to call in. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. The number to join the conversation is 805-781-3875. We've been busy with our conversation, but we still have room for a call or two if you want to share your thoughts or feelings. And so what do you think about this? Have things changed? Do you feel there's been a change? What do you still would like? What would you like to see happen? And do you feel, I guess we started off with you, Greg, talking about this pressure to be a certain kind of man. Is there more opportunities to be a man the way you want to be a man in culture now? Not just a gay man, but expressing your masculinity or your identity. Do you feel more comfortable with that? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I do, but I also feel like that's a product of getting older, too. Mm. You know, I feel like sort of stepping into self and owning self more the older you get allows for you to be, I don't know if I would classify myself as any type, you know, in quotes, of man, but being more who I am, Michael, fully realized, seems to be the man that I am becoming, and that seems to fit into my community.
And there's that freedom of aging and not having to care as much anymore.
Is it care? I don't know.
I think it's just maturity, you know, not, you know, finding more value on your self-happiness instead of what other people think about you.
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it.
You know, I think we build ourselves, I think there's a subconscious thing, and you probably know more about this, Elizabeth, actually. I think there's a subconscious building of our character. Because as gay men, we know, you know, there is the tribe sense, right? Finding other like-minded people, finding your other mm-hmm. clan. So I think we do build into our personality subconsciously, these little things that other gay men recognize.
Yeah.
And that straight people recognize too. And those become those stereotypical things, you know, the way we speak, the way we hold ourselves, our, you know, present ourselves, the type of work that we do,
right?
You know, why are those the areas that we now are go towards? Is it because subconsciously that's where our clan is, and mm-hmm. and it, maybe at some point it could have been truck drivers. You know, maybe, oh, gay men, they're all truck drivers, you know, that could have happened.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few, yeah, there is that little segment, I mean, for those of the people that know about that truck driving segment, but.
Well, and I think it's a really complex conversation because, and as Mike said, you know, the conversation kind of wandered because I didn't really have a direct goal in mind, but more of an experiential thing in mind of this idea of community and finding our people and knowing where we belong. And have we found ourselves in a place where we really get to fully express our identity? Given that we still have to, you know, there's things I'm going to say in certain groups of my friends that I wouldn't say in other groups of my friends, right? We kind of have to monitor how we speak at work and how we speak socially. But do you feel that each of you have found yourself in a place where you get to really fully express your identity, who you are? And is there any part of yourself that you still hold back because you're concerned? Louise, you get the last thoughts today. What's on your mind?
Hello?
Hi there. You get the last thoughts today, Louise.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to say my parents were born in 1911 and 12. I came out of rural Midwest, and I was never taught any type of discrimination. And the day I was happy was the day I heard one of my children telling someone else that she had never been taught discrimination. I accept people for who they are.
I love that. And, you know, I like that you said never taught discrimination because it is a mindset that either is shown to us by our elders or our parents, or you just never question. And I wonder if Grant's generation is one of the first generations that has been raised with a much more open and accepting way about
it. I think people are more open today, but even as a youngster, one of my classmates was a rather unkempt person, but I always tried to be nice to her, even though other people weren't. I don't understand all of this bullying today. It just doesn't register with me.
Well, and I hope that you're a voice of a lot of people, Louise, because I think that's what we're talking about today is, you know, are we willing to kind of live and let live? Are we able to, and I think as Greg said, get to know people on their own merit and the rest of their story follows. But if we allow ourselves to meet each person as an individual and not have anything to do with their identity or their work or their religious beliefs, but just to get to know them on their own merit, that's what we're all striving for. But my final thoughts question was, do you feel that you are in a place where you get to fully express your identity, or are there still things that you hold back? Grant?
I do feel I am in a place that I'm able to do that. I'm sure, like we discussed, there are certain areas where I'm a little less comfortable, but that's, I think, more of an internal struggle that I need to work on and less of a societal thing. Something that just came to my mind that I found to be very interesting. I was in a class one time and the American Cancer Society came in to do a presentation, and they did something where they turned off all the lights and gave everybody in the classroom a flashlight, and they went through the list of trying to find out if you had cancer or if you knew somebody who had cancer, and eventually the entire classroom had their flashlights lit up and the entire room was lit up, and that class had to deal with society. And it came back later in another presentation, and it was the idea of, are you gay? Do you know somebody that's gay? Do you have a family member? And once again, the entire room was lit up. Mm-hmm. And I think in today's society, you have to know at least one person that's gay. And maybe you don't, but you know of people, or you have friends of friends and that type of thing. And so I think because of that, and because how emergent the gay society has become, I do feel more comfortable, and I feel like I am more able to self-express and let people know who I am. And that's also just my personality. I'm a very vocal person. I don't have a problem expressing my thoughts sometimes. That's probably more of an hindrance on myself, but overall, yes, I'm very satisfied.
So not that we came to any great conclusions today, but I think one of the things that keeps coming up for me is this idea that we are all striving to find our group, and we're all striving to be as fully present to who we are as possible and to feel supported in that as much as possible. And I appreciate the three of you taking the time to come in today to share your stories and be a part of this conversation with a reluctant therapist. I encourage you to continue the conversation on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, or on our website, thereluctanttherapist.com, or join us at kcbx.org under the News and Talk panel. We have all of our shows archived. Thank you so much for being a part of this caring talk for the Central Coast. Brian, I look forward to talking to you next week. Everyone be well.